Barnhart Glass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me today. I'm sitting here in the studio with Michael Herron. He's the guest on the second part of the show, but you might hear him chime in a bit from time to time. We're rocking out here in the studio, listening to some cool tunes, feeling good. Yeah, so I just wanted to give you one quick announcement before we jump into the meatier part of the show. I've said that before. I like saying it. I don't know why. I am starting this evening the Plant-Powered and Thriving course with John Robbins and Ocean Robbins of the Food Revolution Network. We've done it before. You've heard me talk about it before. Maybe some of you have taken it already. And maybe some of you have already signed up to take it and are going to start with us tonight. But I'm very excited about it. It's always a wonderful journey. And even though I'm one of the co-creators, I always learn stuff during this program. So I know you will, too. And if you haven't joined up and you're still thinking about it, you can go to my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and click on that Power Hour series that will get you there. Or you can go directly to thriving.foodrevolution.org. And I hope to see you there. If you have taken the course or you're thinking about it, let me know. And you can send me an email at info@realmeals.org. That's only if you're interested in plant-powered and thriving, plant-powered foods and thriving. Who wouldn't be interested in that? I just have to say one more thing. I'm familiar with a lot of these courses that teach people about nutrition and help people go plant-based. And this one's the best. And I'm not just saying it because I'm one of the co-creators. I'm honest about it. I really think this one is the best. Check it out. Great. Whew, okay. I am going to be talking in a moment with the vegan bros, Matt and Phil Letton. They have a new book out called Vodka is Vegan. The vegan bros, Matt and Phil Letton, are brothers and bros who have transformed their lives by adopting a vegan lifestyle. Popular bloggers, health fitness consultants, and animal rights advocates, they've been featured in mainstream media outlets such as Vice, Business Insider, Fast Company, CW, and The Guardian. And they're just getting started, and they're on It's All About Food today. Hello, Phil and Matt.
How's it going?
Hey, thanks for having us on. We're excited to be here.
Yes.
This is Matt, by the way.
Good. Let me calibrate your voices here. Matt, say that again.
Hey, this is Matt. We're excited to be here.
Okay, now Phil.
And this is Phil, and I'm also excited to be here.
Okay, we'll see how I do with that. I know that I sound just like my sister, so it's hard for people.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And while we're talking about my sister, I might as well throw in my brother, too. We're all vegan.
We like that.
Yes.
It's good to have the family support.
It makes a big difference.
Vegan siblings unite.
It makes a big difference. My parents never jumped on, but they did start eating healthier. And my mom was always good, as it sounds like your mom, too, in making meals that supported your diet.
Oh, totally. She was probably, because I stopped eating meat first and became vegan first. This is Phil, yes, this is Phil.
I only know that because I read the book.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, okay, yes, yeah, that's funny. So that was about 14 years ago, and so, you know, Matt wasn't vegan yet, neither of my parents were, but my mom, I feel like our mom was probably the most supportive of me, not entirely. I mean, she was still opposed at the time, but, you know, she was trying her best to be supportive in a way.
Sure. And your parents, they both moved towards plant eating. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, they're both vegan now. We've got cousins that are vegan, aunts, uncles on both sides of the family, you know, friends, acquaintances, you know, it's exploding in our social circles that we're in.
That's awesome. Okay, so here we are. I have to confess, you know, I get a lot of books and I talk to a lot of authors and I don't read the book until like the last possible minute just because of my schedule and I want to know everything and not forget it. And I thought this was going to be like a cookbook with alcohol recipes. because I've read a few of them, and they're fantastic. And, you know, I was all ready to read some wonderful vodka recipes. I prefer my martinis with vodka.
Well, and, no, absolutely. I'm a dirty martini fan myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Olives and vodka. I mean, gin, I can't stand it.
Sam, I had a bad experience, so no gin for me.
Uh-huh. So anyway, I opened the book, and I was like, oh, I didn't plan my time right. I have to sit down and read this. And I did, and I enjoyed it. So thank you. And is it released now?
It's released. It literally just came out this morning. Just came out today.
Today!
And we've been excited. We've been reading comments. I mean, we've been getting tons of messages, tons of comments from people who have just blown through it. Some people got it over the weekend, too. I guess Amazon was shipped a few, like, soon. But we've been getting a ton of comments from people that have just been saying, like, they read it in, like, 24 hours or less. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. So,
and we really wrote it that way for it to be very, like, you know, our style of communicating within our brand and with each other and with anyone is very, it's very, you know, relaxed and conversational. And when we were kind of plunged into the opportunity to write a book, you know, we really wanted to make sure that our conversational style came across. But at the same time, when you're doing it, you're kind of like wondering, like, all right, how's this going to go? And we're very excited that now we started to get the feedback that, you know, not only is it readable, but people are reading it very quickly. And there's a lot of people who aren't traditionally readers who are blowing through the book. So we're excited about that.
Wow. I've read a lot of books. I've read a lot of books.
And we like books.
I've read a lot of books about going vegan, being vegan, why we should be vegan, all of that stuff, and plant-based, and I will continue to read them, and every one of them is precious because we need to flood the world with these books and tell the story in every way we possibly can. And in your book, definitely I got the conversational tone. It's got a bite. It's a bit sarcastic. And like, I think all the time, why don't people get it? It's just when you give them the information, it's a giant duh. I mean, come on, it's the best thing for the environment, duh. Nobody wants to hurt anybody, do they? Not even animals, and yet we are. Why are you eating them? Duh. And on and on and on and on. And I kind of got that tone in here. It's just like, this is obvious. But it is obvious. But it isn't obvious.
Yeah, and I think the way we sort of see it is like, that was sort of a thing back in the past. Like, I would say back, you know, 5 to 8 years ago. Like, I stopped eating meat 14 years ago, became vegan 11 years ago. I got heavily involved in activism for about 4 years. That started about 9 years ago. And that's sort of when, I guess, it sort of took on, like, the duh type thing. But now it really has started to catch on to where veganism used to be, it used to be like this fringe thing where there's just a few people doing it. But nowadays we have people from all walks of life coming in and exploring this lifestyle. You know, we have everyone from like in our social circle alone. I mean, we've got, you know, friends who are like investment bankers, pilots, military, police, stay-at-home moms, you know, pastors of churches, all going vegan or exploring it. And, you know, and then on top of that, you've got celebrities and professional athletes who are going vegan in droves. We've got, Richard Branson and Bill Gates and billionaires like them who are funding and investing in companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods and other plant-based companies. And now we've even gotten Tyson Foods and Cargill, which are two of the largest meat companies in the world. They've even begun investing in plant-based foods. So, like, even the meat industry has caught on and is starting to go vegan. So, I mean, like, we view this, I mean, this is an amazing time to be alive. And people are waking up all over the country. And it's amazing to watch and be a part of.
You know, it's a good phrase, people are waking up, because most people are sleepwalking or they're brainwashed, manipulated by society, culture, marketing. My favorite part of the book, and Michael Herron, who's sitting with me and will be talking with me later, mentioned this too. The thing that you said, that we are all vegan inside of us.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, you know, we both grew up on a different side of the tracks. I mean, we grew up in a small town about an hour outside of Detroit And it's kind of, it's really like a farm town, that kind of area. And so we grew up eating meat three times a day. And, you know, I even grew up probably eating meat more because I ended up 100 pounds overweight with pre-hypertension by the time I was 20 years old and told to go on blood pressure medication. So we understand what it's like to be on the opposite side of these tracks. And that's why, you know, we always identified as animal lovers growing up because we always had pets, which we talk about this in the book, our connection with our dog. But most people, we believe that it is really true. Like, we think the visual of you're already vegan inside is accurate because a lot of people, there, you know, in the past, there was this kind of, there was a vegan stereotype that was maybe kind of a little bit angry. And that kind of caused a little bit of a division and a reaction between, you know, vegans and then meat eaters, and kind of created this clash. And what we've seen nowadays, and really what we're doing with this book, is really bridging the cultural divide and opening the door to everyone, including the people who grew up where we grew up, which is like middle America, you know, regular red-blooded Americans who have kind of felt like they've been marginalized and left out of this. We're actually opening this up to everyone, and it's been exciting to see people from all walks of life really blossoming and really, really latching on to this movement from many different angles. And we really think that, you know, the whole idea that we have pets in our homes is indicative that as human beings, we are and want to be compassionate towards animals. And so really, it's a lowest common denominator than being a unique trait.
You brought up so many points, I don't even know where to start, but I'll try and remember. So let's start first with pets, and this is, you know, just like a personal little commentary. True, I believe many people are kind and caring and really relate to having non-human animals in their homes. Unfortunately, I see a lot of them still are quite mindless or not being mindful. Not mindless, and are sleepwalking, where they don't realize what it is they're doing. Sometimes they'll get a companion animal, a pet, that has been bred, and they're supporting the breeding without realizing what's really going on in that scenario. And I'm, you know, I know there are things that we have to do in our culture, but having your pet on a leash and, you know, just pulling them along, I just kind of flip out every time I see it, and I see that all the time because, you know, we still treat our animals, even though we love them, there's still things that we think are acceptable to do with them because they're not privileged humans. We have a long way to go.
We think, you know, obviously, like, in, you know, in this world, I mean, we can sit in a room with a group of people all day long and literally make an infinite, endless list of things that we think need to change and things that, like, everyone's doing wrong and things that we all need to improve upon. We think that it's just amazing because, you know, we started as the, you know, the sleepwalking people that you're kind of referencing. And we do think that's accurate. Like, I do think that I spent a large part of my life caught up in that, but I don't think it was a fault of my own. It's really this societal kind of outlay that we're born into, where the reality is, for the past several decades, the meat and dairy industrial complex has just done a very successful job of marketing their position effectively. And what it's really done is it's manipulated and lied to a lot of people. And the cool thing now is that with the freedom of information, you know, with books like ours, with shows like yours, people are now having the opportunity to make the connection. We don't believe that people are willfully not making the connection. We believe that it's just deeply entrenched in our society. And the more we open the conversation and allow people in wherever they're at, the more chances there are for people to make those connections and move forward.
Yes, very good. So, Matt, let's talk a little bit about your weight loss, because I'm sure that's a very attractive, appealing story that a lot of people want to hear more about, because so many people are weight conscious. Many people are overweight, obese, and struggle.
Absolutely. I mean, I can say that I've lived my life as two different people, especially when it comes to, you know, physically. But a lot of people look at a physical transformation like me, you know, I was 265 pounds when I was 19 and 20 years old in college, and was diagnosed with pre-hypertension and told to go on blood pressure medication at the age of 20. I genuinely had ideas in my mind that I would be dead by the time I was 30 because I simply felt like I didn't have control over anything in my life. I didn't have hope. I was depressed. I felt terrible about myself. And that just kind of spiraled me into emotional eating. And what I would do all day is just overeat to overeat. So, you know, I like we joke, but it's actually serious. I kind of started Taco Bell's fourth meal before they even started marketing it that way. And I really do feel like I lived the first part of my life as a zombie. I mean, that's really how I felt, because I feel so alive now. And really, yeah, the interesting
also,
part for me is, you know,
also when I was gonna add in, this is also when, so just before or during this period, I had stopped eating meat, and I eventually went vegan. And this is also when he was, I was sort of the more abrasive, angry, you know, stereotypical vegan at the time, and I think that was probably part of it. But just because, you know, he was obviously already depressed and all that stuff on a daily basis. So he was actually the antagonistic anti-vegan to me.
So oh, totally. Like, yeah. That's absolutely accurate. And that's a good thing to point out. I mean, I really was like I was a hardcore carnivore. I was more of a jerk to vegans I was more of a jerk to my brother than most people who consider themselves antagonistic towards vegans. I mean, I was an anti-vegan, piece of crap, really. Like, I was not a nice person, and I was not nice to him. It was Clash of the Titans in our household. The cool thing for me is, you know, when I went through this transformation and I realized, like, I had hit rock bottom, and I started writing in a journal how terrible I felt about myself. And that's how you know things are getting bad. And what I did is I worked up the nerve to ask a friend in college, and he helped me go to the gym and basically got me on a plan within a year. And then I started learning about nutrition a little bit. Within a year, I had lost 100 pounds. And from there, my inside started to change completely. And I started to open my heart, open my mind, and really think about the world more. It was the perfect storm, because Phil was coming along as a vegan advocate. And he had really learned, he had gone from being this shy, socially awkward kid to being this dynamic, effective communicator that was just really doing things right and speaking well and communicating well with me. So I was no longer combative with him. I was actually receptive to what he had to say. And he got me to watch one of those documentaries. And once I watched that and saw how animals were actually being treated, once I opened my mind to that, that was it for me. He had finally gotten me at that point. And the rest, as they say, is history.
It's a great story. My partner, Gary, he struggled all of his life with weight. He was on like every diet imaginable. And then he found peace with food with a vegan diet and lost all his weight. And it's been, how long has it been? 11 years or so. And he continues to just melt away.
Wow.
I'm just afraid he's going to disappear at some point.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good story. And people need to know that this happens. It can happen deliciously. It does take time. And I think sometimes the things that take time and take your time, investment, are so much more worthwhile and longer lasting.
Oh, totally. We would totally agree wholeheartedly with that. You know, we've gone through, both Phil and I have gone through a lot of ups and downs in life and spent our lives as, you know, people that we wanted to change. And the thing is like the things that challenge, the things that appear as challenges are the things that can define us the most in the most positive way, if we actually look at it properly.
I've done this before, but I like to quote Cinderella. And she said, have courage and be kind. And Matt, when you were going through your weight loss journey, you definitely had to start with courage. And you had to be kind to yourself in the process. It's Cinderella was smart when she said that, right? Cinderella? Have courage
and
be kind.
That's a deep quote right there.
Yes. It was from the most recent film. I don't think she said it early on. This is the contemporary, more evolved Cinderella. Right. Okay. Okay, we just have a few minutes. I wanted to say, I've been vegan for 30 years, I'm celebrating my 30 years as a vegan this year, which is quite fun and exciting. I've seen a lot of transformation over these years. I've seen veganism go from being really out there and weird. I can't tell you what people have called me or thought about me in the early days. Where there weren't all these great products. Oreos weren't vegan back then.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. And a lot of things. And so it's wonderful to see the change. It's wonderful to see the transformation. The thing about angry vegans, there's a lot to be angry about. This is a very cruel world we live in. And people sometimes jokingly, with love, of course, in their hearts, would call me a militant vegan. And I might have had a harder edge when I was younger, and I've definitely rounded out those edges over time. But sometimes people are naturally defensive, even when you're being the gentlest person and most welcoming person you can be, just because you're standing in your truth, you're standing in your integrity, and that is difficult for people who, since we're all vegan inside, know that what we're doing is the right thing, and it drums up a lot of stuff for them.
Oh, totally. And I think, I mean, to me, what I started to do is I started to view it like, because, you know, I was very militant back then. It was really only when I first went vegan, I was militant for like the first few months, because I thought this is what I just needed to do. I was supposed to become militant and abrasive and all this other stuff. But once I decided to, like, I guess you said, take responsibility, and I just wanted to do whatever it took to inspire people to change, that's when my demeanor began to change. And to me, it's like a defining, those are like defining moments of like, how dedicated are you to how much do you care about animals? This person is getting defensive and getting upset with you, even when you're showing kindness and being nice. Are you going to cave and you're going to turn into a militant vegan now? Or are you going to stand strong for the animals and, you know, keep calm and stay composed and try to understand where the other person's coming from? And I think what's important is that, like, yeah, the other person, they're vegan at heart. So when they're interacting with you, even if you're being nice and if they're getting defensive, it's because they're vegan at heart and you're showing them who they are and you're showing them what they're doing. Vegan at heart, but they're eating meat. They're supporting the worst cruelty to animals, but they're vegan at heart. And so when they're getting upset with you, they're getting upset with themselves. It's like that's how they're showing it, but really they're getting upset with themselves. And I think it's important to always be understanding of other people and always try to understand where other people are coming from, especially when they're upset with you. That's when it's the most important, and that's when you can have the biggest impact. Because if someone's getting extremely upset with you and they're just being very defensive and, you know, and all that, when you can be understanding of a person in that moment, their guard will come down and their defenses will come down, and they'll be open to having a conversation with you, and they'll go vegan. They will. I've seen it happen over and over and over again.
Yes, so have I, and it's a beautiful thing. Okay. I really enjoyed reading this book. There's a lot of fun stuff in here and a lot of sarcasm and wit. But I also have a bone to pick. Can I do that with you?
Well, we'll see.
Okay. I love the I love the expression bone to pick. But anyway, so you write, if you're going to a party of 60-year-olds, there's a good chance they won't have a lot of vegan options because older people can be a little behind the times unless they're our parents. Now, I know your parents followed you and are hip. I just turned 60 this year. And I have a lot of parties. I go to a lot of parties. And most of these parties have people of all ages, from like 0 to 100 maybe. And most of the parties I go have lots of wonderful food. If you go to a party that my partner and I throw, there's amazing vegan food. And I just think it's not age-related. I've been to a lot of 20-year-old parties, 30-year-old parties, even 40-year-old parties with people in Brooklyn that wasn't vegan.
And I'll be straight up. I agree. You're right. I mean, we're seeing it everywhere. That, right. You know, that was kind of a tongue. That was kind of a tongue in cheek.
Okay.
Which, you know, most of our book is tongue in cheek. But I mean, the funny thing is, like, that's a tongue in cheek statement. But the reality is, we know that, like, you're in our parents' camp. Our parents are friends with, you know, people their age, and they're all going vegan. Everyone in their neighborhood. Everyone in their church. You're totally right. It's not an age related thing. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think that was just kind of a tongue in cheek thing in the book. But you pointed it out, and I'm like, oh shit. Maybe we shouldn't have put that in there.
Well, you know,
when you read a book that's hundreds of pages long, you're going to mess up a few times, and that probably was
that's
that was
okay.
one of our mistakes.
That's
caught
okay.
Us. You caught us.
Hey, you know, that's I turned 60. I got to defend right. myself. I'm 60, and I'm vegan, and I'm awesome.
Oh, we love it, awesome. And that is amazing. We support you, and we're sorry.
And you've been doing it for 30 years?
30 years.
Yeah, I mean,
I was a Wonder Woman 30 years ago.
You're an OG.
You know, speaking of which, you guys are Superman, and I'm a Wonder Woman, and we're inviting everybody to become superheroes with us, right?
Yes,
that's right. That's right.
That's
we
right.
love that.
Okay, so tell me, before we go, what's your favorite cocktail?
I love a dirty martini. That's my favorite drink right now.
Okay, and what kind of vodka?
I've been rolling with Belvedere and Tito's lately.
Belvedere for me. Yep. Okay. Cool. I've moved over to martinis. I mean, not martinis, Manhattans. I did a serious martini phase. And what about food?
That's funny.
What's your favorite go-to food?
I love the Beyond Burger.
Is this Phil?
This is Phil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Phil is the Beyond Burger.
Beyond Burger and the Beyond Sausage. Those are my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Matt?
Well, I better switch because those are two of my favorites as well. But I actually really love Guardian Beefless Tips and their chicken scallopini. And, you know, that's actually, you know, we really like, I mean, obviously, like, we eat a wide array of foods. But one of the things we always really love to point out is just how far we've come with where plant-based food is at. Just seeing the money roll in and seeing the innovation that these companies are now rolling out. To us, that's almost one of the most exciting things about every chance we get to eat them. Is it's almost like just this appreciation for how amazing things have gotten, and what an amazing time it is to be alive.
Okay, that's a good place to just say yes and say thank you, Matt and Phil Letton. It's a good time to be alive, and it's a good time to be vegan. And check out Vodka is Vegan, a manifesto for better living and not being an a-hole. And we could say asshole on this show, not be.
Love it.
Freedom.
Freedom. Right on. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
All right. Thanks guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. That was Matt and Phil Letton, the Vegan Bros, author of Vodka is Vegan, now out today. Check it out. It's a fun read. And that's about it. Okay, now it's the second part of the show. And I have in the studio with me, who is this? I'm just kidding.
It's all right, I can take it.
Michael Herron. And is there a bio for me to read in this book?
I think there is a bio in there somewhere.
Because I didn't print one out.
I think
but
it's
let
in the
me
back.
Tell you about the little I know about, the lot I know about Michael. He's an artist and a musician and a nice guy. And he's been involved in a fascinating project for a few years. He's also an author. And, look, it says you're a Brooklyn-based composer and performer. Michael Herron combines elements of classical composition with experimental electronics and storytelling to create hypnotic and boldly intimate work that walks the line between Laurie Anderson, Peter Gabriel, and Dead Can Dance. He's an artist in residence at Hammer Lane Farm Animal Sanctuary, where he created the solo multimedia theater piece The Animal Show, which premiered in New York City in 2016 and continues to be performed in venues throughout the United States. And that's what we're talking about today, The Animal Show. And not only is it a show, but it's a book. And I've got the book in my hands.
Yay.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
So, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you here. I've seen you out and about in and around the local vegan scene, and you're here now.
Yeah.
I think art is probably the most important, or one of the most important things we have in life, especially to move our species forward. We need art to tell the story. We need art to tell us where we've been and where we're going. And it can be beautiful. It can be thought-provoking. It can be difficult. But I'm a big believer in art. I'm an artist myself, so I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, I guess obviously because I make art.
One thing these things just pop in my head and I just spit them out.
Do it.
One thing that surprises me is that artists, I don't understand why all artists aren't vegan. Let's start there.
I don't understand why everyone's not vegan.
Everyone, but at least artists try to see the world. They're not following the fold. They're not trying to be manipulated. They're trying to be original and expressive and see the world rather than sleepwalk.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of like what those guys were saying, too, that I think about that a lot lately, especially like the people in my life recently who aren't vegan who I'm like, wait, like, you know, for a long time I was in that space of like, I got to just hang out with vegans now. Like, I did a lot of, like, you know, rescue work and slaughterhouse vigils and all this kind of stuff. And that stuff is really intense. And it becomes like, I don't know if I can sit with someone who's, you know, eating meat and all that kind of thing. And I still struggle with that. But I'm starting to have that sort of perspective of I was a vegetarian in my 20s and an animal rights activist. And then I was like, forget it. For a long time, I started eating animals again. Mm. So, I mean, if I could do that.
Anybody could.
Yeah. Like, and so if I could, like, raise the curtain and see, like, the horrors of what happens to animals and then be like, forget it. I'm going to just close the curtain again and do whatever I want.
Do you remember what led you to closing that curtain?
It sometimes feels like, I guess not to overshare. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. So that, like, a lot of stuff, a lot of things that you care about stop mattering.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess I had some help in, like, closing that curtain. But it was a long time after I got sober until I really started thinking about it. And in fact, it was I was interviewing. I like to talk to activists on this podcast that I've been doing forever. And I was talking to some activists when I lived in Houston who were protesting the Chinese consulate for importing dog and cat fur. And I was trying to be try to be relatable with them and say, oh, yeah, I used to be an animal rights activist and a vegetarian. And they were like, what? used to be what happened? And I was just like,
oop,
I don't know. And that's when I started thinking about it again. So I don't know. I guess that's just to say lately I've been feeling a little more or a little less. I don't want to say judgmental. A little less. My expectations have lowered in a more open kind of way. That I feel like, you know, I give people more of a benefit
of
the
doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a very hard world. It's a very hard world, and people are challenged right and left. And sometimes change, often change, even if we know it may help us in one way or another, is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's just a hard place to be. But I keep hoping and reminding people and wanting to bring you over to the light where the joy is and where the delicious food is and saying it's worth the effort. It's worth the struggle. You don't know how wonderful it can
be.
You don't know how good you can feel. And I think the Vegan Bros touched on this a little bit, but I like to say it's all about food. And once you've got the food in line, it opens the door and you see more. Now, you may not want to see everything that you see, but you see a lot more exploitation in everything, not just with what's on your plate or who's on your plate. Excuse me.
Yeah, you know, like, because I'm in this weird, like, sort of transition of my perspective about others, after I said what I just said, I was like, oh, my God, I'm being one of those apologetic vegans. And I was. Like, there's the other side of it. When I finally was like, just get over yourself and go vegan, and I did it, I was like, oh, this isn't hard. You know, like it took a little bit of a transitional time to figure out what I was going to be eating then. But now, like, it's super easy. And so, and in that way, I'm like, why aren't people, especially people that I know who like know that I've been vegan now for like 10, 11 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
What are you waiting for?
It's so true. There's a moment in the show where I really have that, like.
And if you are waiting, folks, and you're confused and overwhelmed and you have questions, I've offered this all the time. I have an email address, info@realmeals.org. You write me a message, I give you an answer. It's simple. Tell us about the animal show.
Okay.
So you were artist in residence at
Tamerlane. Yeah.
And you created this thing. They weren't looking for you.
No, they weren't looking for me. I had the idea actually at Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. I went with my friends, the Vegan Moes, which is interesting to mention.
They've
them
been
on a show. Oh, they have?
They've been here live.
Oh, I love the Vegan Moes.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going out to Thanksgiving with them. And which is, for people who may not know, it's a yearly event at Woodstock where the thing that I love about it is that the turkeys are the honored guests rather than menu items. And they announced they were having this new space. And I had just finished my previous show called Tentative Armor. And I made a book and an album like I did with this show. And I was like, what do I do now? And then I'm at Woodstock and they're announcing this new space that has new, like, it's going to be a bigger, you know, I realized, like, oh, I wonder if I could do an artist residency? I just made it up. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out to do it at Woodstock, but I was just getting to know Peter and Gabrielle at Tamerlane Farm and just sort of like started dropping like, hey, I wonder, what do you guys think? And they were like, yeah, come and do it. And I was like, I don't know what it is. And they're like, that's cool. So I spent a year visiting the farm as much as I could, working with the animals, volunteering. And I wrote stories about those animals, their stories, my stories about, you know, particular animals in my life who had, I felt, transformed the way I perceived animals, and a lot of rescue stories and, you know, a lot. And so I created this show. It's a solo piece, although I do have a string quartet that plays with me in the show. So it's electronic music, storytelling, video, string quartet, piano, all this stuff woven together to sort of tell – it tells the story of my philosophy, I guess, about animals and why I'm vegan and kind of with the understated intent to turn the world vegan.
Yeah. Go vegan.
Do it.
Yeah. So you had some stories in here about animals that touched your life.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about one of them?
So some of the early ones? Or
yeah, the early ones.
Okay.
Not at the sanctuary.
Yeah. I had a dog named Corky. I was like, should I head for that story?
Yeah.
when I was Corky was I was an adolescent. I was just before adolescence when I met Corky. She was a stray dog. I met her on the street, was walking home in like suburban Houston, Texas. And she just became my dog. It's weird to say my dog, but you know, you would say my friend, my yeah.
Sure.
So she was my friend through coming out as being gay in Houston, Texas in 1982, 83, which wasn't a big like
No, that was not a good time.
Yeah, and I didn't come out at that time. It was much later that I came out. It was when I was beginning to, like, notice, like, huh, I seem to be a little bit different. So, you know, and, like, divorces, alcohol, all different things that were going on in my household, I had consistency in this dog. Her story, it's the first animal story in the show. Like, I start the show talking about being at Tamerlane for the first time, and then I bring Corky in. Partly because I know people can relate to a story about a gay kid and a dog who are like, you know, like she didn't understand any of this. And I didn't really say it to her, but she was a constant, unconditional part of my life.
That's the key word, unconditional love.
Yeah.
Many people say that humans are the most intelligent species on the planet. And I think that's debatable.
Agreed.
And when we talk about being mindful and we see the other non-human animals on this planet as they truly are, we can see their skills, their talents, their intelligence, their behavior. And sometimes it's a lot better than what we're doing and a lot more intelligent. And the thing about dogs that many people say is this unconditional love. And we could all use some help learning about that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I want – well, I'll add it and maybe we'll wonder what you think. Like, it feels like a sort of arrogance that humans okay, good. I'm glad that – I had a feeling that that'd be cool. You know, that we decide what other animals' intelligence is based on what our intelligence is. Like, how does that work?
Gary and I were just – my partner Gary and I, we were walking – we walk a lot. We were walking around. We saw a bird flying. And we were just like, wow, a bird flies. I mean, just think about that. A bird can fly. A bird builds its own home every year with twigs and sings about it.
you know,
it just seems pretty amazing.
Yeah, and think about the things that animals aren't doing to the planet.
Like, the flip side, everybody else isn't polluting like we are.
Yeah.
And destroying things and confining animals in factories and torturing them in mammoth numbers.
Yeah.
Yes. And poisoning ourselves with decadent foods. And, yeah, we're pretty crazy species.
Yeah. It's not a great thing.
Yeah. So I don't know that we're the best. So I'm just going to take a brief little detour here from the animal show. I understand it's your birthday in 2 days.
Oh, what? It is.
And I brought you from Beyond Sushi a sweet potato chocolate brownie. Have you ever had them there?
I have not had them there.
Now, sometimes it comes with ice cream. They make a black sesame tahini ice cream that is nothing like you've ever had. It's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
But I couldn't really bring that because it would have been soup.
Yeah, that's
so
fair.
So enjoy that. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Michael. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Should I eat it? How can I eat it while we're doing
this? Hey, sure.
Okay.
Tell me what you think. It's kind of mushy.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I like it.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't eat it. If we're going to be talking, it might be...
I'll
save it.
It's
free.
Yeah, save it.
I'll be smacking my lips.
So there's the animal show, and now there's the animal book.
Yeah.
And I imagine that some of the text in the show is in the book?
Yeah, the book has all of the text from the show. Mm. There's an album that's coming out at the same time. Quite... pushing it to the last minute to finishing the album. Like, it's still not done yet, and it's all coming out.
No rushing.
Yeah.
You just take your time.
Yeah, it'll be done this week. I mean, it kind of has to be.
Okay.
So they're companions to each other. The animal book has photographs and all the stories from the show, along with some stories I toured with the show last summer. So I did some, like, a lot of activism and more sanctuary work as I was touring in between shows. Part of the goal was to visit a lot of sanctuaries and, you know, see and get involved with activism around the country. So some of those stories are in here. And, I decided to be a photographer and videographer. So a lot of the photographers are mine.
Oh,
the photographers'
very
photographs
nice.
Are mine. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. There are some Seth Webster and Diana Brzezinski. I suddenly was like, wait, did I say your name wrong? No, I didn't. Their photographs are in here as well. So it's a really well exciting thing. My friend Luke Curtis designed the book, and it was his concept from bdstudios.com.
Excellent. And the director of the show.
Adam Fitzgerald.
You've had an influence on him.
That was one of the unsuspecting things. I had an influence on the guy that's recording because he's not vegan either, and I'm telling all these stories, and he's recording them. I saw him... I teach his son. He lives in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. And he was riding his bike, and he was like, oh, hey, man, those stories stuck with me. Yeah, so same with Adam. There was one day that I was talking about, I'm telling a story about a rooster at Tamerlane that was kind of being bullied, and they were trying to figure out exactly which rooster yard, because as you might already know, roosters are aplenty at sanctuaries because they get their basically waste of the egg industry. Within the story, I mention that and why, and I talk about what happens to baby chicks, the male chicks that get ground up alive or gassed. And I'm telling the story to my director.
And they go into animal feed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling the story, like, to my director, like, I just finished the story and I want his feedback about the whole story. And he's like, do they really do that? And I was like, the grind up? And he was like, yeah. I was like, oh, my God, yes. And he's like, am I going to have to stop eating eggs now, too? And I was like, I don't know. Do you want to participate in grinding chicks alive or not? So it was an interesting, you know, it was interesting to realize, like, telling these stories and putting the show together had effects in different places I didn't set out for them to. I mean, I'm super happy that they did. I haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks, so I'm not sure if he's where he is with veganism, but he's definitely – there was a day that he went – I forgot where he was visiting, Brazil, I think, and he came back and he was like, oh, you ruined – he was like – He decided he was going to eat meat when he was in Brazil, and he just couldn't do it. He was like,
"Well, that's good."
Yeah, and he was like, he was faux mad at me for that, but also like, you know,
that's really good.
Yeah,
I was just wondering if he was going to need more reinforcement, because it makes me think a little bit about the book that I just read, Vodka is Vegan. There's a lot of stuff in there. They talk about grinding up chickens, the male hens, when they're just adorable little chicks that get ground up and go into animal feed. And we do so many horrible things to animals just to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
And many people, if they heard it, they would not believe it. They would not believe it.
Oh, yeah.
And some people say, don't tell me, I don't want to know.
That's the worst in a way, right?
Like, what's that?
It's still happening whether I tell you or not. Like, it's.
But when you're one-on-one and you say, okay, this is happening and it's true and you don't want to believe it, and now do you still want to support this activity knowing this? And that's a really uncomfortable place for them to be in. And we have this job without being the angry vegan,
mm-hmm.
without being the nagging vegan. I think nagging's okay sometimes. Of just keep putting that out there and putting that in front of people so that they can know their truth. And
yeah.
Be the vegan that's inside of them.
It's really interesting, the different approaches. I have a friend who would be perceived as like an angry / nagging vegan. I needed that. Like, there was a whole period when I was already on my way to being vegan, but I was mm-hmm. a lot of like, oh, I'm so busy today. I went and got a slice of pizza, blah, blah. I needed to hear someone be like, dude, stop.
Yeah,
stop making excuses and just do it.
Slap my face here. Wake up.
Yeah. So this friend of mine, I don't think she'd mind if I say her name, Leah, is one of those people that is like, hey, you know that that contact lens solution you're using is tested on animals, and like one of those things that I conveniently overlooked. And mm-hmm. I appreciate that stuff. Like, it feels confronting, and it kind of is, but it's like, do I want to live by my ethics or not? So I love a
yes.
preachy, nagging vegan.
Now, what I read in Vodka is Vegan is their big picture, and I appreciate the big picture. I support moving people to more plants and less animals and not sweating the small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on where you are in
yeah.
your journey, if that small detail is going to be important to you enough. I think the idea is that we all eat less animals, stop eating animals, or at least can we just get rid of the cruel – slaughtering any animal is cruel, don't get me wrong. But the factory farms, this holocaust that we're doing to the animals, it's just horrific. That's got to stop.
Yeah.
It's just got to stop. I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
And you can eat chocolate sweet potato brownies.
Yeah, like you can eat all kind of different kind of brownies. Like there's so many options.
There are so many options. And I just want to promote myself here. Why not? It's my show.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Where else?
I don't promote myself enough. I have a blog. It's now, I think, in day 1,209. It's called What Vegans Eat. And I've been posting for over 1,200 days now everything I eat every day. That's all. That's the premise of the blog. That's it. And I just give it all to you. Everything I'm eating every day. Because when people say, what do you eat? I say, go to my blog. There's now over 1,200 entries. And if you can't imagine what vegans are eating, this is a vast array of what this vegan's eating and what I've been eating in New York, a lot of times in California. I was just in Quebec. I've been in Costa Rica. And I put it all in there.
Hmm.
Thank you. That is all.
What is the URL? What's the web address?
So it's my nonprofit, ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com. The acronym is REAL, Real. And it's one of the things that we have up there. We also have this show. It's all about food, archived and transcribed all 9 years plus of programs.
Hmm. Love it. I'll check it out. I didn't know you had that. I'm really interested in looking at that because I get that question. Like, I mean, I get
over 1,200 entries.
But I remember really being like, oh, God, I have to go vegan. What now? What do I do? And I got some cookbooks and figured it out. But it felt like it was going to be.
Yes. and you know, most of the time I eat very healthy. I had a cancer over 11, 12 years ago, advanced ovarian cancer, 10 to 20% survival rate. And that motivated me to be a better vegan, be a healthier, whole food, plant-based kind of person. And so most of the time I'm eating really good food. And the thing is, I love it. Yeah. I love this food. The cleaner I get, I crave it. Occasionally, the other day I had a gluten-free English muffin. Okay. Now, to me, this isn't a healthy food.
Right.
But we had a few in the freezer, and I'm cleaning out all the food because I'm heading out to California, and I want all the food gone. So I had it, and I enjoyed it, and I'm done.
I love it. And I liked it.
But it was vegan. I mean, that's my line. It's got to be vegan.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Yeah. So where have you been with the animal show?
Houston, I mentioned already, I guess. Or did I mention that I did the show there?
Say it again.
I did it in Houston, Berkeley, Los Angeles, Portland, Rochester, Philadelphia, and New York City. I think those are the places.
Have they been friendly Veg Fest kind of venues?
I just booked theaters on the way, and I tried to sort of like coordinate with vegan groups or sanctuaries where I could sort of like connect. The most interesting place was Houston because I lived there before I moved to New York. I guess I mentioned that already. And I did theater there. I didn't do my own work. I music directed. So I have a lot of theater friends, and I wasn't vegan yet, so none of them were vegan. But they all were like, oh, we're going to come see your show. So I had a big house of mostly non-vegans, and I was actually a little nervous because in some ways there are some places in the show that are like flat, straight up like preachy vegan moments. People got it in a very – I was surprised, but in a and they got the message, even though – people didn't necessarily say they were going to go vegan now, although there was one guy that was like, I'm never eating chickens again. I should check in with him and see if he did.
You should.
Yeah. But they seemed to get the idea. They understood where I was coming from in a way that I was welcomed.
And where's the animal show going next?
So I'm doing a album and book release show here in New York City on the 21st of June at Judson Memorial Church. Super amazing artist activist place. And I don't have any plans yet. Like in stone. I'm working on a Boston show. I'd like to go up to Syracuse because amazing Strong Hearts Cafe is up there. And I don't know. I just love some Syracuse. And yeah, I've been focusing on making the album and the book. So it's like I'm independent. So I produce the shows and the books and everything else. So I have to focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah. If you want to do your art, do it yourself.
Yeah.
For
and
the
it's
most
actually,
part, right?
Yeah. It's a great time to do it though. Like doing this book, it's like, we're doing it on our own, and it's kind of great.
Good. So we just have four minutes left. Okay, cool. So tell me about some of the places you love to go to in New York City, the greatest city in the world, especially for vegan eating.
Oh, there are so many places.
I know.
So I think my favorite, like, sit-down restaurant is, Beyond
Sushi.
No.
Oh, Beyond.
What? I can't think of the name. I'm going there Friday for my birthday. Brooklyn. Issa Chandra Moskowitz's place.
Oh, Modern Love.
Modern Love. Why was I going to say Beyond Love?
Because you're looking at this Beyond like, Sushi
I'm just
sweet
drooling
potato
over
brownie. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's modern my favorite love. Sit-down place. I love Marty's V Burger. I went there last night.
I just talked to Marty on this show last week.
Oh, come on. I love that Marty.
Yeah, he's good. I loved his passion, and I say this a lot, but the vegan entrepreneurs that have made restaurants, I mean, they're so committed and they love their food, and that's where you want to go and eat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's so supportive of everyone in the community as well. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think those are my favorites. I mean, like Red Bamboo, always a favorite. Peace Food Cafe, my favorite cheesecake. It's my favorite cheesecake in the city. Yeah.
Very good. Well, the thing is, there are so many choices. I was just at Francia a couple of days ago with Karen Davis. And what was wonderful is I've seen her talk. I've had her on the show, but I never had a time to just like relax. Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours, mutual friend, Sheila Schwartz, invited both of us. And it was just really fun. And what I loved about her is she's just like vegan and so true and so committed and so non-bending. And I raise a glass to her.
Yeah, she saw it. I just saw her speak at the National Animal Rights Day a couple of days ago. She's great.
Right. All right, we've got 2 minutes left. So, Michael Herron, I want to thank you for joining me in It's All About Food and for creating and for being the artist and telling a very important story, the animal book, the animal show. And where do we find you?
MichaelHerron.com.
Michael Herron, that's MichaelHerron.com. MichaelHerron.com. Very good. You've been listening to It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You know you can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And I want to remind you one more time, tonight is the first day of the Plant Powered and Thriving 6-week course with myself and John and Ocean Robbins. It's the best course in nutrition and learning how to eat more plants, and it's fun. And we'll be there answering a lot of questions tonight, so you can still join in. Find it at thriving.foodrevolution.org. Great. I'm Karen Hartglass. Remember, what is it? Have a delicious week, everybody. This song is by Michael Herron, and it's called Home Again. Thanks for listening.
Yes, it was a long time. Yes, it was a dream. The kind you find inside your world, nestled in between the fear and hesitation, suspicion and distrust, growing out of boyhood, awakening to lust.